This is When Science Speaks, a new web series profiling innovative and interesting people working in science and technical fields, from academia to industry to the nonprofit world. We explore how to be a powerhouse advocate for science and your research, how to advance your career in meaningful ways that make you happy, and how to push back on the ongoing assault on science and other related issues of interest happening in the world.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of When Science Speaks. We are so fortunate to have Chris Smith as our guest on today's show. Chris has a fascinating combination of skills and interests. He's a neuroscientist who recently started working as the postdoctoral affairs program manager at North Carolina State University. At NC State, Chris helps the 400-plus postdoctoral fellows discover their own unique set of skills and interests that can be translated to a meaningful career, whether that's in academia, industry, government, or a nonprofit organization. And Chris also is a contributing writer and blogger about career exploration and postdoctoral development programs. Chris himself was a postdoctoral fellow in the psychology department at Vanderbilt, where he served on the board of Vanderbilt's Postdoctoral Association. He received his PhD in neurobiology at UNC Chapel Hill and his BS in neuroscience from Furman University. Thanks so much for being here, Chris, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark. I'm so glad someone shared this podcast with me a few weeks ago, and I've been listening regularly, and I've already made some connections with the Postdoc Academy people, so Sarah and Celine and their team. So yeah, I'm benefiting from the podcast, and hopefully people can benefit a little from what I have to say.
Well, thank you, and we'll be making that funds transfer to your account right after the show, so thanks for that little plug, but I appreciate that. That's one of the purposes of the podcast, obviously, is to help people make connections. I should mention that today's episode is brought to you by Bayer Strategic Consulting, a unique firm in Washington, D.C., using true-to-life training and insider relationship-building strategies to help grad students and postdocs sharpen their ability to develop and deliver messaging to effectively communicate with their current colleagues and supervisors or potential employers and other important stakeholders, regardless of the career that they choose. And Chris, we've got a lot to cover here. I want to get right to these questions because you've had a really interesting journey so far with respect to your career. So let's sort of begin at the beginning. It's always a good place to start, it's been said, which is, you know, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a small town in South Carolina, Greenwood. And at that time, was pretty, you know, interested in science and health. My mom was a nurse. My dad was a chemist. I got interested sort of toward the end of high school in sort of understanding drug addiction and did research on that in undergrad and grad school, kind of understanding why people make sometimes irrational decisions when, you know, they're under the influence of drugs. Like, why do they use when they know it's bad for them? So that kind of drove my passion on that front for a while. And it still interests me, but I've kind of pivoted in what I'm doing now.
Really interesting. So, you know, one parent is sort of in the medical and also the caring profession.
Yep.
with your mom. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, anyone who's spent any time in the hospital knows that the nurses are really angels, I have to say, you know, having seen this firsthand. And then as well, having the medical background, plus, you know, your dad being a chemist in the science background. So that's really interesting that you're doing, you know, you're doing what you're doing. And I guess it kind of goes to my next question, because as I said in the intro and in describing your career interests, I mean, many people are most comfortable in either a verbal realm, like, you know, communication or language, policy, etc., or the quantitative world. You know, they're a scientist, engineer, some type of related field that requires essentially more math and more math training. But you actually, you know, have both sides, you know, of the brain firing with equal horsepower here. And so if you could, you know, I'm interested in that. I'm always interested when people have both of those capabilities at the same time, because it's really not typical. So, you know, you mentioned a little bit of your upbringing as far as your parents. Can you talk a little bit more about how interest in both and comfort and enjoyment in both those, you know, both the qualitative and the quantitative developed?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, we're all highly influenced by our teachers. I think teachers are the unsung heroes of society, but So, you know, in elementary school, got into, you know, some science labs, some gifted and talented program things where you got to do a lot of hands-on, you know, experiments and hypothesis testing, kind of learn about the scientific method at an early age. I also was pretty encouraged to keep writing. So, you know, for some projects, we had to write a little autobiography about ourselves. I remember it was like fourth or fifth grade, like all about me. You had to write all about yourself, and, you know, that kind of, I guess, got a lot of good feedback about that and, like, you know, my writing skills. And so that sort of, you know, gave me encouragement to keep doing it and, you know, I could do it. So that kind of, I guess, was kind of early on, you know, science and writing communication sort of background. So.
And, you know, now you've been in your current role for a relatively short time at NC State. I think it would be interesting for our listeners to hear your story about how you ended up, you know, at this stage of your career, you know, relatively early on in your career, how you ended up doing, you know, being in leading the postdoctoral affairs, being specializing in postdoctoral affairs office at NC State, you know, given your background and your various interests, how did it all happen?
Sure. Well, I mean, I was a postdoc myself, so I have firsthand experience. I was at Vanderbilt for 4.5 years. And as you mentioned in the intro, at that time, I, you know, at Vanderbilt got involved in the Postdoc Association there, which is a group of postdocs that work together to, you know, provide programming and sort of a sense of community for postdocs on campus, to highlight postdoc research, to advocate with the administration on postdoc related matters. So that kind of got me sort of interested in the postdoc affairs world, I guess, and I interfaced a lot with the postdoc office at Vanderbilt. And then I didn't really consider a postdoc affairs position as a career until last fall, when someone in our biomedical research and education and training office at Vanderbilt, which is an office that supports professional and career development for PhD students and postdocs, forwarded me a job posting for a position in postdoc affairs at a different institution. And reading through the job description, I'm kind of like, well, yeah, I could do these things. And this is something that seems, you know, of interest to me. I think it fits sort of my long-term aspirations to make a difference in the world. But also, you know, I had some of the skills, I think, already from that time working, you know, in the Postdoc Association at Vanderbilt. And so I applied to that position. I saw this position at NC State and applied to it. Things moved pretty quickly after that. And, you know, here I am. I think, you know, writing for the Postdocket, which is the National Postdoc Association's newsletter, helped a lot, too. At the time when I was writing for that a couple years ago, that wasn't like the goal, to get a position in postdoc affairs. It was more just to broaden my writing, you know, skills, to write sort of more general pieces that weren't, you know, technical scientific papers. But naturally, I'm writing about postdoc, you know, interest in postdoc programs, because that's sort of the content of the postdocket. And I think that sort of helped me in terms of showing interest in this type of career. So when I was interviewing for this position, I think that went a long way, having that experience. So I kind of think it shows that sometimes you don't know how your experiences are going to build up to make you, you know, whatever you are going to be in the future. But that you should sort of pursue things that interest you and not maybe worry too much about where it's ultimately going to go. But hopefully by building these experiences, you'll eventually find that career that best suits sort of what you've done and what you're interested in.
Being open to various opportunities, not necessarily knowing how things might turn out. I'm really interested as well. You were talking about the Office of Postdoctoral Affairs at Vanderbilt and your leadership with the association, with the postdoctoral association there as well. How do you think that impacted your overall experience at Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting, Mark, is that most people don't choose a lab or choose a program because of the great career development resources that are at the institution. So it's not like I knew all that existed when I got to Vanderbilt, but I was glad it was there. I mean, it was one of the original NIH Best Award sites. So this is a broadening educational experiences for scientists, essentially, awards. And so the whole point of that award is to show PhD trainees, so grad students and postdocs, sort of the range of careers that are out there beyond the traditional academia tenure track faculty job. And so as part of that program, they bring in outside speakers who, you know, went to Vanderbilt for either their grad school or postdoc, and they came and talked about what they do now. And a lot of them were in very diverse roles, right, in pharma or in a nonprofit or working for the government or in a startup. And you could kind of just see that these skills you're learning, you know, as a grad student and postdoc are transferable beyond academia. So I think that was huge to just see examples of the range of career options out there.
Really interesting. I mean, you said that the universities just generally don't advertise that information to prospective PhD students or postdocs. I mean, is that something that you think should actually be part of the marketing package? I mean, do you think that had like it's enough of an attraction, or it's enough of a, I should say, like really positive feature that it should be put out there when, you know, a university is kind of marketing itself?
Oh, I think it's definitely becoming that way. I mean, I think in the past 10 or 15 years, the landscape has changed quite a bit, and universities are realizing that they need to be, you know, preparing their trainees for diverse careers, because most people won't get faculty jobs just because of the number of PhDs being, you know, awarded every year and the relatively small number of available positions. And so I think it's become, you know, aware, and I think the NIH Best and other initiatives are pushing that. And the big thing about all these initiatives is the importance of data and showing outcomes. And so that's been a very big push with Best. So I know Vanderbilt has been collecting, and maybe even before Best, like outcome data for their alums, like where do they end up? And that data is, you know, becoming, you know, very important to display on the website to show, like, when you, if you come to Vanderbilt for your training, you can do all these various things and you'll be, you know, theoretically competitive for them more than, you know, maybe if you went somewhere else and there weren't a lot of resources, or it might just be harder for you because you have to figure it out on your own. So I think there is this emphasis on outcomes and documenting outcomes and showing sort of the value of, you know, coming to X university or Y university to do your training. So I think that is changing. Yeah.
And as far as the training that students and postdocs, PhDs and postdocs are getting, I mean, you talked a little bit about that and like the NIH Best program, trying to expand the menu of different topics, you know, for training. For the reason, one of the reasons that you stated that there a lot of people aren't going to be going to tenure track positions, not as many may be available, or just a different interest on behalf of the postdoc or the PhD. What sort of, if you can look kind of in the future, what do you see with respect to postdoc training, and how do you think that might change given what you've seen both as a postdoc yourself and also in your current role and your writing for the postdoc and just being in that universe?
Well, I mean, I think one thing that's perhaps a misconception is the fact that faculty don't want their trainees to go on to careers outside academia. There's actually a paper that came out, I think, January 30th of this year from the Best Group and PLOS One, and I can send you the link and put it, you can put it in the notes.
We can put it in the show notes, sure.
Yeah, but they polled a bunch of faculty at Vanderbilt and Michigan State and maybe one other institution about sort of what were their thoughts about this programming, like all this, you know, extra career development programming. And unequivocally, the faculty thought it was great. It was useful for their trainees to have this. And because I think deep down, you know, the faculty want their trainees to succeed. The trainees kind of like their kid, right? Like they're in the lab and they want them to like succeed in life. And, you know, even if they want them to have a faculty job, I mean, they're scientists. They see the numbers. They know that, you know, it would be not very logical to not prepare them for, you know, other careers. So I think people, you know, advisors are more supportive than maybe trainees think they are. And, you know, there's a different power dynamic there. So often the trainee doesn't want to like push it, but I think they'd be surprised at how willing their advisor would be to let them, you know, take a part in some of this programming. And I think the other thing is the skills you're learning, like how to communicate effectively, you know, how to work as part of a team, like these kind of broad skills that are transferable that, you know, are kind of pushed in some of this best programming are useful skills, even if you stay in academia. So it's not like taking a part in this programming where you're going to like learn how to like better, you know, manage your time or manage projects or work with people isn't useful broadly. So I think a lot of it's just conveying the value to both the stakeholders at the institution, but also to the trainees themselves, because I think some of them think, well, I'm just here to, you know, power through this and get the faculty job, and I don't need to distract myself with all this other stuff. And I think especially for postdocs, because they are on a more accelerated timeline. I mean, they're not, you know, supposed to be in the postdoc, but for a few years. And so they're very focused on, you know, getting whatever they think they need to try to get a faculty job. But I think it's, you know, not advisable to not be taking advantage of these opportunities. And I think they just need to be sometimes made aware of their value, even if they want to stay on the academic path.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, as we were kind of talking offline, I've been at the AAAS conference here in D.C., and these topics are very much a big part of what AAAS is talking about and what the various scientists, experts from across the country are talking about during sessions at AAAS. And it's really interesting. And for me, it's heartening to hear. It's really, really great to hear because, as you say, these are very translatable skills, how to operate, you know, politically. I think when sometimes people hear the word politics, they think about partisan politics and then maybe they have various thoughts that are negative in that area. Mm-hmm. But, you know, politics kind of at its essence, as you know, is really how to get things done. And that's whether that's getting that paper published or getting the job for, you know, at this biotech company or getting the tenure track position. It's really a lot, like you say, the same set of skills because you're dealing with humans and processes. Mm-hmm. Now, to that end, you know, you have a really innovative program that is called Accelerate to Industry at NC State. And I would love for you to talk more about that because I think our listeners would be interested in hearing more.
So Accelerate to Industry has been going on for 2.5, going on 3 years. And so a lot of this grew out of the fact that here at NC State, we have this Centennial Campus, which is sort of this public-private partnership where academic buildings are right next to, you know, office buildings or research innovation buildings for companies in the area. And so by definition, NC State's very eager to form these partnerships and highlight them as like a value add for our institution. And so the grad school has developed this Accelerate to Industry program where we're leveraging the fact that we have these industry partners near us, either here on campus or in the Research Triangle Park right down the road, which, as you know, is a big hub for biotech research as well as sort of information technology, you know, software as a service like SaaS and Carry. So there's a lot of, you know, those types of industries around here. So leveraging the fact that we have all these great industrial clients and opportunities around here, and then trying to show them the value of coming to campus and interacting with our trainees, so our grad students and our postdocs, and seeing what a great well-trained workforce is right here in their backyard that they can take advantage of and not have to do some costly search for, you know, the next software engineer or chemical engineer or staff scientist. So the whole goal of this program is to sort of bridge the two and to think about what skills does industry want to see from PhD-trained scientists. So a lot of those are these soft skills, these communication skills, the ability to, you know, get to the point of, like, what is all this data showing us or what's the next step we need to do in this process. And so the industry partners are conveying to our trainees like what what skills are important to them. And then they're actually helping our trainees with feedback. So we have this industry immersion week that happens every summer for a whole week. And we have a whole bunch of industry partners on campus. I think last year there were something like 60 or 70 industry representatives there from a whole bunch of companies. And they give feedback to our trainees on their resumes, on their LinkedIn profiles, on their elevator pitches, on their cover letters, and are kind of showing, telling them, like, you know, this is how it comes across to us, you know, as people in industry that are often like the hiring managers in industry. So the importance of conveying, you know, things slightly differently when the goal is different, because they don't care that you studied, you know, X, Y, disease, but they cared that you learned how to optimize some process to achieve some goal, you know, given a timeline. Like, that's important for industry, that you can show, you know, sort of, you know, critical thinking and problem solving. So we think that's a great partnership. I mean, we're actively trying to recruit more industry partners. The cool thing about this program is the partners actually pay to be part of this program. And so they're helping fund a lot of the programming we're doing. So we don't have to, you know, go ask the state or the university for money to do some of this stuff. And they get value out of it because they, like I said, have access to our talented trainees here. And they get to kind of test drive them out too, right? They get to meet with them and, you know, kind of see how they are. They might do like an on-site visit kind of thing before they have to, you know, really officially go down the hiring road. And just one more thing I want to add is that, you know, we're actively trying to broaden this to other academic institutions. So we have a train the trainer workshop happening June 12th through the 14th here at NC State, where any person in any university or academic center across the U.S., if they're interested in coming and learning more about our A2I program and how they could implement it at their institution, we'll be sharing a bunch of resources, and it's freely available to people, and we're actively trying to sort of grow a network of institutions that are trying this approach, and hopefully we'll get eventually from this network data on what are best practices to make trainees industry ready, and, you know, start to quantify the effect that these programs have on sort of broadening the career options for our trainees.
I love it. I think that's fantastic. And is there any information that you'd like other than, you know, the name? Is there a website that we should put in the show notes or anything like that? We can.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We can do that to make sure that people know exactly where they go, because I'm certain there's going to be interest in this program among our listeners. Let me ask you this. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I'm just saying, I can share with you just the general website, but also the interest form if people want to kind of be on our email for the train the trainer thing as we give you more updates. Like, we haven't opened registration yet, but by the time this airs, we might have. So they can click on that and register. So.
Perfect. That's super. Now let me ask you this too, Chris. What so far in your own career journey, what would you say has been one of the most important professional development lessons that you've learned as you've made your way, you know, from PhD to postdoc to NC State in their Office of Postdoctoral Affairs?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, one thing I try to take, and I think it's hopefully one, you know, people also try to take, is the fact that you kind of need to be flexible in what you think your life's going to look like, and sort of let things come to you as they do. But you also need to sort of know when opportunities are arising and take advantage of them. So when someone asks you, you know, like, would you like to write for this thing? You might, you know, should say yes and just give it a try, and you never know, right? Or, you know, get involved in this organization. You know, you might be surprised where it ends up. So I think being open to opportunities and maybe seeking out some that specifically interest you with not having maybe a career goal in mind. I mean, sometimes it's great if you do, but I think by just naturally sort of going toward things that interest you, eventually you build up sort of a skill set and also a portfolio of things you've done. And I think that's, you know, ultimately what will set you apart on the job market. And, you know, hopefully if it's something you're interested in, your passion will show through when you're interviewing and and kind of make the little extra difference that I think you need nowadays. I think it's more than just the stats. It's a lot about, you know, the intangibles sometimes when you're applying for these jobs and showing that little extra whatever. So, like I said earlier, I didn't kind of plan this career, but it sort of has, you know, built on my experiences, and I think it will be a very rewarding one. I mean, I'm kind of early on, but we'll see where it goes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as you're suggesting too, like the definition of a successful experience isn't necessarily that you get the job or, you know, it reveals, you know, this amazing new path. Maybe that will happen and that would be great. But even if you decide you don't like it, maybe there's some value in that too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of times, you know, learning what you don't want to do or what you don't enjoy is just as useful, because now you can say, well, okay, we can narrow that down from our list of things we might want to do with our life. And if you don't try it, you might not really know, especially if it's very outside your area. You know, like if you've never been like in a leadership role, you may think, well, like, or maybe I'm no good at that, but you know, you can give it a shot, maybe like a lower stakes one to start out with and just see how it goes. And if, you know, you get into it, you know, you might find a whole new path for you that you didn't even consider initially.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep, that's really great. Let me ask you this: we're coming to the end of the episode, and we're also coming kind of to the end of the first quarter of the year. Of course, we've got another month and a half, or maybe halfway, or a little more than halfway. I'm curious about whether you have any goals for 2019. I've been asking this question. I think I have to stop asking at the end of March. But what my goal is, as I've said before, is to have a new episode of When Science Speaks posted every Friday, so listeners get a chance to hear from interesting, you know, passionate people like you and our other guests who are doing really cool stuff, who are fired up about it and who talk about, you know, how they got there and have resources along the way that they can share that maybe can help others take a similar path, or at least find out about it and test it out and see if it's for them or not. So that's what I'd like to try to do, is to have a new episode every Friday. Have you given any thought to any goals that you might have professionally for this year?
Sure, Mark. I mean, I think the big one is kind of, you know, selling into this job. And I think the reason I took this job was to try to make a difference, to try to help postdocs, you know, not feel so, disenfranchised or so disillusioned about the process or their prospects, but to let them realize that they have a bunch of transferable skills. And sometimes it's just a matter of reframing them in a way that, you know, is more compelling for, you know, certain careers, and hopefully helping them kind of figure out what those careers are for them. And ultimately, I think the success of this job is to watch people move on and proceed into careers they find meaningful and impactful, and hopefully are impactful on society and the world. I mean, I think that's kind of generally like my goal, is to help these people find their, you know, path and hopefully, you know, help them get there. And in the end, I think that will make me feel like what I'm doing is important and worth it.
Well, those will be the last words for the episode. They're very well said. I hope, of course, that you fulfill your goals, or that you feel like you made progress towards them. You can't always, you know, get exactly what we want, but if we're moving in the right direction, that's a victory too that we need to recognize. Thank you, first of all, Chris, for being with us and sharing your experience, sharing your insights, sharing resources. Like mentioned, there'll be information in the show notes about Accelerate to Industry and other things that Chris mentioned during the episode. Thanks for being here. And also would like to thank you for listening. And I hope to have you back next Friday for another episode of When Science Speaks. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to click subscribe. Check us out on the web at whenscienceSpeaks.com, and we'll see you next time.